There is a nice, a very nice book written by Hori and collaborators, often referred to as Mirror Book. This is a big book, and you may be intimidated by that. So if you are, then you may want to start with this Witten's paper. This is thinner, but it's quite insightful. And for higher genus computation, I would refer to my paper with Cecotti and Bershadsky and Buffer. For the black hole entropy that I'll be talking in the today, I think one of the nice review articles is by Mohaupt, and this is HEPTH number for that. This is very extensive reference. This contains a lot of discussion about supergravity, n equal to supergravity, and black hole solution, etc., and the derivation of Bekenstein entropy formula and its quantum correction. And so this is built on his work with Cardoso and Bernardo Dwight. So this is a very nice review article. And toward the end, I'll be referring to my own work with Strominger and Buffer last year and some of more recent work. So topological string, G topological string amplitude is defined as integral over genus G Riemann surface of this following correlation function of supercurrent. Where etas are Bertolami differentials. And in the case of, so there are two types of models. In the case of A model, I choose the supercurrent G plus to be of this type, where this XI with I refers to holomorphic coordinate in the Calabi-Yau manifold. So again, I'm apologize for the indices, maybe, so I should use A to denote the dimension of the moduli space of Riemann surface, and I, 1, 2, 3 refers to the holomorphic coordinate of the Calabi-Yau. So in the case of A model, the supercurrent is chosen so that G plus has del x in it, and G right plus has del bar x bar in it. And minus operators are their complex conjugate. Like so. Psi's are left and right fermions. And in the case of B model, excuse me, G plus and G minus for the left mover is as they are, but the role of right moving G plus and G minus are reversed. So that's the B model. So in the A model, these are dimension one operators, and these are dimension two operators. And as is explained in these papers, which I don't have time to discuss today, f of g depends on the Kähler moduli of Calabi-Yau. In the case of A model, and the complex structure of Calabi-Yau in B model. Okay. And in fact, F0 is nothing but the prepotential for type 2 A or type 2 B on this Calabi-Yau. So remember that yesterday, in the first half of my lecture, we discussed the type 2 compactification on Carabiel. And there I said that in the case of type 2A, the vector multiple at the moduli space is nothing but the Kähler moduli space. And in the case of 2B, it is complex moduli space. And prepotential, that determines the low energy effective, three level low energy effective action for the vector multiple. Therefore, depends on Kähler moduli for the case of type 2A and complex moduli in the case of type 2B. And they turn out to be just G equals zero version of this computation. Okay? And in fact, we can be a little bit more explicit. So we can write down low energy effective theory action using chiral superspace. So we introduce two chiral Grassmannian variable, theta 1 and theta 2, where alpha is the spinner index. And for G equals 0, so you have four components of that because you have theta 1, theta 2. Each of them is a chiral spinner with two components. And you can combine the vector multiplet field into a super field by using this theta, which starts with the scalar field. So this is nothing but the scalar field. And then you can expand this super field in theta and generate its super partner fermion and the vector field. And for G equals 0, genus 0, if you use this prepotential and just do this superspace integral, this generates the low energy effective theory term containing a vector multiplet only. Okay? And for higher genus, there is a correction to interaction in the vector multiplet field. But actually, this type of term is not corrected at all by string loop correction. This, in some sense, is this type of term is exact at the tree level. And this just follows from the fact that the vector there is no neutral coupling between vector multiplet field and hypermultiplet field. If there is a correction to this kind of term by string loop effect, then it would be in contradiction with this statement, because the hypermultiplet field would contain dilaton. And so the dilaton is contained in hypermultiplet field. And string loop correction would necessarily contain string coupling constant and therefore dependence on dilaton. And therefore, having correction to this term by string loop would contradict with that statement. OK? But there are higher genus corrections. But that does not mean that vector multiplet interaction do not contain higher genus correction at all. There are interaction with vector multiplet and supergravity multiplet that come from higher genus computation. And for each genus, we have an interaction of this type that you can compute. Where this W it is not possible to get the light on this one. Can I? It's okay. It's not so important. If I move this way, can you still see this part of the blackboard? Yes? Okay. So this W is part of the supergravity multiplet. Where F alpha beta is coming from gravitophoton field strength. Remember that supergravity multiplet, n equal to supergravity, contains one vector field called the gravitophoton, and F mu nu is nothing but the field strength of the gravitophoton. But you must have learned when you, for example, studied supersymmetry by Bess and Bagger, that if you have anti-symmetric tensor field in four dimensions, that can be described as symmetric bispinner. So this can be decomposed into F alpha beta and F alpha dot beta dot, where this is symmetric bispinner for the chiral spinner component, and these are antichiral components. And this corresponds, this in fact, you can check that this corresponds to the self-dual component of this F mu nu. And this is anti-self-dual. In four dimensions, F mu nu contains six components, as you know, three for electric field and three for magnetic field. And self-dual, there are three self-dual components and three anti-self-dual components. And each of them are given by symmetric bispinner. So alpha and beta go from one and two. So symmetric alpha beta has three components, and that's self-dual component. And this is anti-self-dual component. So the self-dual component, thank you very much, of gravitophoton field strength appears in this multiplet called Weyl multiplet. And so this also depends on theta, therefore. The leading term is this F alpha beta, and then there are spinners, there are fermions, and then the top component is the Riemann curvature. Again, I wrote the Riemann curvature in terms of the spinner representation this way. Okay? So this is a higher genus contribution to coupling between vector multiplet field and supergravity field. And again, there are no further quantum correction to each of these terms. What I mean is that if you are interested in coupling of vector multiplet field with 2g minus 2 power of w square, which is a supergravity field, then it gets a contribution only from genus g. And there are no corrections, no contribution from genus less than g or greater than g. And that, again, comes from the fact that there are no neutral coupling between hypermultiplet field and the vector multiplet field. And then you can integrate over theta to generate various interaction terms. So for example, for genus one, the interaction we wrote over there generate a term like Fg equal 1 of Z, the scalar field, multiplied by R square with a Riemann curvature index appropriately contracted and with other way of extracting theta. If you take 4 theta out of W square, W contains R times theta square, so if you take 4 theta out of W, then you get R square interaction. Okay? But there are other ways to get theta to the fourth, and so that is denoted by dot, dot, dot. Similarly, for genus greater than 2, Fg, similar computation give you something like this times R square times F square to the 2g minus 2. With other things. So you can see that it looks as though F square plays a role of topological string coupling constant. if you think that topological string partition function is given by exponential of sum over all genus of fg of z times lambda to the 2g minus 2, where lambda is a topological string coupling, then it, by looking at this, you see that in the low energy effective theory of type 2 string compactified on Carabiao, the graviphoton field strength square plays a role of topological string coupling. So this is a nice computation. And topological string amplitude has a various beautiful structure. In many cases, you can compute them effectively, explicitly. So for example, there is a method called holomorphic anomaly equation, which you can integrate iteratively at each genus to obtain explicit form of f of g in many Carabiao spaces. And for specific type of non-compact Carabiao called toric Carabiao, there is a very powerful method called topological vertex, which compute for you the topological string partition function directly to all genus. So there are many powerful mathematical machinery to compute this amplitude. But you can ask, well, is there any a specific role played by this particular type of terms? Note that we are only looking at some subset of low energy effective theory terms. So for example, we are not talking about terms that involve hypermultiplet at all. Okay? So, well, so this is a nice mathematics, but is it useful? Is there any context in which a computation like that is useful? And in order to look for a context in which that is useful, one thing to note is that this, such computation would be particularly interesting in a case when the graviphoton field strength is adjustable. Because graviphoton field strength plays a role of topological string coupling. So we should be looking at the situation where graviphoton field strength gets some non-trivial vacuum expression value. And one of such interesting case is a case of a BPS black hole in four dimensions that come from D-brain wrapping on cycle in Carabiao space. So that is what I would like to talk in the rest of the lecture today. So first, I would like to tell you what this BPS black hole has to do with graviphoton field strength. So we have in mind Carabiao compactification of type 2 string theory. So we have a Carabiao space. And we imagine that in it there is some cycle. So let's consider more specifically type 2B. So then there is some three-dimensional cycle in six-dimensional space, so it's some middle-dimensional space, on which you wrap these three brain. And then you get some kind of point-like particle in 3+1 dimension. Okay? And but this three brain is charged with respect to Ramon-Ramon four-form potential, which give rise to various vector fields in it. And particular combination of that, as I explained yesterday, is a graviphoton. So in particular, therefore, this three brain is charged with respect to graviphoton. So geometry near this three brain would have non-zero value of graviphoton field strength. So therefore, computation like that can potentially be relevant. And in fact, I'm going to tell you, and the fact that since Sen had some very interesting lecture yesterday makes my job very easy, because I'm going to use that to argue that the entropy of this black hole are completely given in terms of this topological string amplitude to all order in string perturbation theory. Okay, so let's be a little bit more quantitative. And let's call this three cycle to be gamma. Okay, so if you choose any three cycle, then the mass of this D-brain may not be minimum. Because you may be able to deform this three cycle to minimize the mass. So you can ask, well, what is the lowest mass possible for given D3 brain configuration by moving it within the given homology cycle? And in fact, there is a lower bound of the mass available, possible for each given gamma, or each given homology class of gamma, and it is the following BPS bound. So suppose you have D3 brain on a cycle gamma. By cycle, I mean just a submanifold of the Calabi-Yau space. Then the mass of this D3 brain is bounded from below by the following formula. Okay? Where K is the scalar potential for the moduli space of the vector multiplet, which I gave yesterday as this. So e to the minus k is given by integral of omega and omega bar over entire Calabi-Yau space. And then this lower bound is given by e to the half k times the integral of omega over the three cycle. Note that this right, left-hand side is invariant under rescaling of omega. Yesterday, I said that there is an ambiguity for rescaling of omega because omega is characterized only by the fact that it is a holomorphic freeform. So we can rescale omega. But if you rescale omega, then e to the minus k is rescaled accordingly. And that is canceled by presence of omega over here. And note that this left-hand side depends only on the homology cycle. Of homology class of gamma. So if you give me arbitrary three cycle, then the mass of the D3 brain given by that cycle may not necessarily saturate this bound. So then the D brain may try to shrink to saturate this bound. And when it saturates this bound, the cycle becomes what is called a special Lagrangian. So, for a given homology cycle, D3 brain wrapping on special Lagrangian 3 cycle saturates this BPS bound. So when we talk about BPS particle coming from D3 brain, we are talking about such D3 brain. Mm. Special Lagrangian refers to the following property, that first of all, Calabi-Yau manifold is scalar manifold. So therefore, there is a scalar form. Scalar form is non-degenerate unsymmetric two form, so you can regard it as a symplectic form. And if you can have if you have symplectic form, then you can consider Lagrangian submanifold of it. That is that submanifold on which this symplectic form degenerates. So this is what this Lagrangian refers to. Namely, on this three submanifold, if you restrict scalar form on it, it vanishes. Special refers to the property that the phase of the holomorphic three form evaluated on this submanifold is constant. And that's called special. And you can prove that if you have a special Lagrangian submanifold, then it saturates this lower bound. Okay. So, this when the deep brain is saturating this lower bound, then its mass is given by the cycle. The homology class of the cycle it is wrapping. But on the other hand, from the discussion we had last time, this homology cycle also knows about the charges that this BPS particle carry with respect to various gauge field in four dimension. So remember that if you have a homology cycle AI, BI, these are homology cycles. Of Carabiao 3, where I goes from 0, 1 to H, 2, 1. And we have chosen them so that A do not intersect with each other, B do not intersect with each other. AI and BJ intersect only once when I is equal to J. And if we choose this in such, this in such a way that for each A cycle, you have a gauge field in four dimensions. And the number of times a deep brain wrap on A cycle give you electric charge with respect to that gauge field. And the number of times a deep brain wrap on B cycle give you magnetic charge with respect to the same set of gauge field. Okay? So suppose gamma is homologically equal to QI times AI cycle and PI times BI cycle. Okay? So you can imagine a case when the deep brain wrap on various homology cycles this way. And so then it is easy to evaluate. So such deep brain has electric charge Q and magnetic charge P. And this crucial integral, the period integral over here, is given, of course, by QI omega AI plus PI integral of omega in the B cycle. But these are the kind of period integral we did in the last lecture. So this is given by, in our notation yesterday, XI. And the second integral is given by F with lower index I, where FI is given by derivative of F with respect to XI. Okay? So this is given by this. So I'm going to denote this period of omega over the cycle on which you are wrapping deep brain as W. As a function of X. So this is defined as QI XI plus PI FI of X. Okay? So so we can also therefore write the BPS mass. So I'm going to denote this lowest possible mass for given homology cycle as BPS mass of this deep brain. So this is going to be 1/2 of K times this W of PQ of X. Okay? So for given Carabiao, this gives the minimum possible mass of a D3 brain that can have when it is wrapping on the cycle, wrapping cycle gamma. But this is a function of the moduli of Carabiao. So we are so far fixing the moduli of Carabiao and asking what is the lightest D brain for given homology cycle. And this is the answer. But then you can ask, well, this depends on the mass of, this still depends on the Carabiao moduli. Is there a sense to minimize this BPS mass by now varying the moduli of Carabiao? Is there a context in which that makes sense? And in fact, there is a situation that makes that something like that happens, and that is called attractor mechanism phenomenon. So there is a case. So first of all, I should write first that M BPS is a function on of the Calabi-Yau moduli, more specifically the vector multiplet moduli of this compactification. And the black hole attractor mechanism that I'm going to explain now minimizes this BPS mass. Yesterday, you heard from Ashok Sen about some minimization principles that determine the entropy of black hole, etc. And this is the same minimization principle at this string tree level. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is to view this D3 brain wrapping on cycle of Calabi-Yau as a BPS black hole in four dimensions. So far we are looking at this D3 brain wrapping on some cycle in Calabi-Yau giving point-like particle in four dimensions as just part-like particle state in four dimensions carrying some electric and magnetic charge. But it has some mass, so that means that if you couple this to gravity theory, then it will modify the space-time geometry near the D3 brain. In particular, when the charge of the this D3 brain, P and Q, become large, it becomes more and more appropriate to describe that as a classical black hole. So what happens, the kind of things that you have to know to decide when this is appropriate is when the curvature of this metric that is curved in the presence of this BPS particle becomes strong or not near the horizon of the black hole. And another way to characterize it is the following, that when you have a mass, when you have a particle with some mass, then there are two important length scales that you can compute. One is purely quantum mechanical and something you learned in undergraduate course of quantum mechanics, that is a Compton wavelength. So if you have a mass, then you have an equivalent of energy, and then you can ask how much spatial uncertainty that such particle can have. So that's Compton wavelength. So you can think of it as intrinsic quantum mechanical fuzziness of the size of this massive object. So that's one length scale. That contains, that involves Planck constant, but not, does not involve Newton constant. On the other hand, you can also construct the length scale by considering Schwarzschild radius. That is a purely classical concept, and that involves Newton constant, but not Planck constant. Okay, and then you can ask which become large. And typically, Compton wavelengths become small when the mass is large, but the Schwarzschild radius becomes large. So when the mass of the black hole becomes large, eventually the Schwarzschild radius becomes much larger than the Compton wavelengths. And that's when the classical, semi-classical geometric description of such object in terms of black hole become appropriate. So I would like to discuss the BPS, now black hole solution, coming from such a deep brain configuration. So when P, Q is much larger than one, then the Schwarzschild radius become much larger than Compton wavelengths, and then the gravity description is good. So I'd like to write down the black hole solution in such situation. First of all, I'm going to make use of the fact that this configuration preserves some supersymmetry in four dimensions. So, but using that and spherical symmetry, we can we can reduce the possible form of the metric in the following form. So this is time, and this is a radius. Away from the center black hole, rho goes from plus infinity to minus infinity. This is a metric of unit 2 sphere. So if you like, e to the 2u, e to the minus 2u is proportional to the area of this 2 sphere, and this is going to be the 2 sphere that surround this black hole. So therefore, this area factor e to the minus 2u is going to be the area of the horizon of the black hole. And I'm writing this as a 10-dimensional metric, so I included the Carabiao metric in it. Because as you see, we are going to see that the metric that you obtain is not product of 4-dimensional metric and the Carabiao metric, but in fact, it is warped, that as you go near the horizon of the black hole, the Carabiao metric is going to be changed according to certain differential equation. I should also note that when u is constant, then this metric becomes that of ADS2 times S2, the configuration that Sen was talking about yesterday. And in fact, we will see that as you approach near the horizon, u approaches to some constant value. So this is an ansatz for the metric. I didn't write the ansatz for the gauge field or Carabiao moduli, but there is analogous ansatz for the spherical symmetric ansatz you can make for the gauge field strength, something that Sen wrote last time in his lecture yesterday. So you can write down Einstein equation in for this ansatz, but Einstein equation then would give you second order differential equation for rho. But we can simplify it by requiring that we are actually interested in BPS configuration. So this geometry should satisfy some supersymmetry, should preserve some supersymmetry, which means that there should be some Killing spinner. And the integrability condition for the Killing spinner give rise to some first order differential equation, which is called BPS equation. This comes from the requirement that there is a Killing spinner. And this gives you first order differential equation for this metric factor u here, here, and here. The fact that all these three factors are related by single function u is due to the supersymmetry. And then there is a differential equation for u given as follows. Okay? But this is not the only equation. Well, note that I'm writing this BPS mass as a function of the moduli of Carabiao according to this equation. So I fix the charge of the black hole, and for given charge of black hole, there is a mass, lowest possible mass of the black hole given by this BPS equation, which is a function of Carabiao moduli. Now, we also, you know, it turns out that in order to preserve supersymmetry, in fact, you have to make the Carabiao moduli as a function of rho also. You can view it in various different ways. From 10-dimensional point of view, you are just asking this 10-dimensional space-time to preserve some supersymmetry. Or you can take 4-dimensional point of view and say that, well, you consider a system coupled to 4-dimensional gravity with scalar field corresponding to this Carabiao moduli, and then you can ask what the BPS equation for that these two are the same question. And the equation for the Calabi-Yau moduli Zi is given by this equation. Okay, where this Gij is a metric for the vector multiply the moduli space that you can obtain from the scalar potential. So this Gij bar is del I del j bar of k. Okay? So we can just look at this equation and solve it. In fact, this is easy to solve. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. But let me just tell you that if you solve this equation, you will find that as you go from rho to infinity, which is a space like infinity, to rho equal to minus infinity, then u and z goes to some constant value. Okay? Now, where is that constant value? Well, it is easy to see where that constant is. First of all, if you look at this equation, you see that in order for the z to be constant, mbps has to be at extrema of z. So if you think that Zi is constant, then it means that del Zi bar of MBPS is equal to zero. And there is similar equation for Z bar, which gives you del Z of MBPS equal to zero. It just means that MBPS is minimized. So this shows that as you go towards the horizon of the black hole, the moduli of Calabi-Yau try to minimize the mass of the BPS mass of the black hole. This seems like an energetically reasonable thing to do. Yes. Excuse me? I think it is always a minimum. Let me see. Let me think for a moment. Ah, yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. So that's an answer, right? In fact, I think that if you so I don't have time to explain, but you can massage this equation to make it more obvious that u and z goes to some constant value. And if you rewrite this equation in that way, it's clear that the solution is driven towards the minimum of in fact, it is clear from this equation also, right? Because the direction is toward the minimum of the BPS mass, BPS potential. So it follows from this equation itself that you are going toward the minimum of BPS mass. And the second thing you note, so this is the first observation, that because of this equation, then this statement is called attractor mechanism. That is that Calabi-Yau moduli is attracted towards a value which minimizes the BPS mass. Okay? So therefore, the mass of black hole is not only minimum with respect to the choice of cycles that deep brain wraps, but also the choice of Calabi-Yau moduli itself. And the second statement is that if you look at the first equation, then u becomes constant when e to the minus u is mbps. Because you want this to be equal to 1. And remember that e to the minus 2u is proportional to the area of the horizon. So this shows that area of the horizon is given proportional to the square of the BPS mass minimized at the attractor value. Okay. Now, it is sort of obvious that this equation completely fixed the moduli of Carabiao in a generic situation. But we can make it a little bit more explicit and bring it into the form which you sometimes see in the literature. And so I'd like to do that. And also, another motivation for doing that is that this will relate this construction and attractor mechanism to the flux compactification, where the moduli of Carabiao is also fixed. These two are closely related phenomena. So I would like to demonstrate that. Okay. So let me look a little bit more closely this attractor equation. Okay. So MBPS, remember, is equal to e to the 1/2 of k, or let me take compute the square of that, is equal to e to the k times w bar, where this w is given by qi xi plus pi fi. And so therefore, you can also write it as d of e to the k w equals zero. And this is often written as covariant derivative of w. Remember, as I explained last time, or maybe I didn't, W is not a function on the Carabiao moduli space because there is a rescaling ambiguity of X. But rather, you should think of it as a section of line bundle over holomorphic section of line bundle over Carabiao moduli with e to the k as a metric. So if you have a metric for the line bundle, there is a natural connection. And this capital D is to be regarded as a covariant derivative with respect to that connection. Okay, so you can think of this BPS condition as a condition that covariant derivative of this potential, holomorphic potential W, is equal to zero. Now let me try to write it in a little bit more geometric way. Yes. No, that was what I was saying here. I'm taking square here. Yeah, but those are equivalent statements. If m dm is equal to zero, d of m square is also equal to zero, and vice versa. So MBPS. MBPS is equal to absolute value of 1/2 k of W. Not sure I understand what you say. W and W bar. W is holomorphic and W bar is anti-holomorphic. So you can write D and D is equal to del and del bar. Shall I do a little bit more? Do you want me to do it a little bit more detail? So this condition is equivalent to say D of e to the k W bar is equal to zero. But D is del plus del bar. So this is equivalent to say that del and del bar of this is equal to zero. But this annihilates this, obviously, and this annihilates that, obviously. So this is equivalent to the statement. Okay, now, so let me write down this W in a little bit more geometric way. So remember, so the way that it came first was that this was integral of holomorphic 3 form over A cycle. X was integral of holomorphic 3 form over A cycle. And P was integral of holomorphic 3 form on the B cycle, like so. Okay? Now, we can also write it as integral over Calabi-Yau space of some 3 form F with omega, where this F is a 3 form on Calabi-Yau given by linear combination of Q and P, where A and B are chosen in such a way that AI integrated over B cycle give you delta ij, and et cetera. Namely, A and B are cycles which are sort of dual to capital A and capital B cycle. So you can also write it in this way. So let me write it over here. So this W is, in fact, integral of 3 form with omega over Calabi-Yau 3 form. Okay? So then what does this equation tells you? Well, what this equation says is, so let me write it over here. This is equal to QI AI plus PI BI, where AI and BI are basis for H3 cohomology. So now we want to covariant derivative of W to be equal to zero. Okay, so what does that mean? And let's try to do the covariant differentiation in the ith direction. Well, F3 is independent of choice of complex structures, so D does not act on F3. But D, of course, acts on W. Omega, holomorphic 3 form. And covariant derivative means is that you take the variation of omega holomorphic 3 form only in the direction of 2, 1 form. If you make a generic variation of omega, then infinitesimal variation of omega, since omega is holomorphic 3 form, so if you make a generic variation, it will become linear combination of 3, 0 form and 2, 1 form. What this covariantization does is to project out the variation in 3-0 form direction. So therefore, this can be written in this way. And this is nothing but the basis for H21. So the requirement that the BPS mass is minimized is the same condition as saying that inner product of this F3 with any H21 form is equal to zero. But this means that F3 cannot contain 1-2 component, because F3 contains 1-2 component, one holomorphic index and two anthropomorphic index. You can have this inner product non-zero. So that means that F3 should be element only of a linear combination of 3-0 and 0-3. By the way, it cannot also be component of H21, because F3 is a linear, real three form. F3 is a real three form, so it, if it contains one, if it contains one, two components, then it must contain two, one component, which would then have non-zero the other way around. If it contains two, one component, that itself has no inner product, but reality requires that it contains one, two component, which has non-zero product. So it would be into contradiction. So it has to be in this subspace. So that means that F3 has to be linear combination of holomorphic three form and its complex conjugation, which I wrote in this way, where I introduced some arbitrary constant complex number C. This is equivalent to this statement. Okay, so now given this, we can take integral of this over A cycle. If I take integral of this over A cycle, then F3 will give you PI, because integral of F3 over A cycle will pick up this term. And on the right-hand side, you get the real part of C times XI, because integral of holomorphic three form in A cycle give you X by definition. And if you integrate this over B cycle, it will give you QI from the left-hand side, which is equated with real part of C times FI of X on the right-hand side. And this is actually what is commonly known as attractor equation. And if you look at this equation, this manifestly has twice the, it manifestly has the same number of equation as the number of cycles. And so combined with complex moduli and the choice of C, it completely determines the complex moduli. By the way, I should also note that this way of fixing the complex moduli is exactly both physically and mathematically equivalent to the way that the complex moduli is fixed in the flux compactification. In fact, you might have noticed that this is nothing but Gukov buffer Witten superpotential that appear in the context of flux compactification that I believe Becker might have discussed in her lecture. So you see that, therefore, this the way that Calabi-Yau moduli is fixed by attractor mechanism is essentially the same mechanism as Calabi-Yau moduli is classically fixed in the flux compactification. Any questions so far? Okay, so let me then go on to discuss entropy of this black hole. So as I said, when the charges are large, P and Q are large, the mass of the black hole is large, and the curvature near the horizon is small, and the Compton wavelength is much smaller than the Schwarzschild radius. And so therefore, semi-classical gravity description would be varied. So in that case, one would expect that classical Bekenstein entropy formula would estimate the number of states of this BP, of this black hole. So if omega PQ is a number of states of this black hole with charges P and Q. By that, I mean number of ground state Oh, yeah, maybe I should say a few things. So this belongs to a family of solutions related to the Reichner-Nordstrom type black hole in four dimensions. And one of the distinguished features of this kind of black hole is that the temperature goes to zero when the mass of the black hole becomes at the extremum. So typically in the Schwarzschild black hole without charge, it has Hawking radiation, and Hawking temperature grows as the size of the black hole becomes small. And eventually the black hole radiates very violently, and the temperature goes toward infinity as the size of the black hole goes to zero. This is not what happens for this charged black hole. For this charged black hole, actually the temperature goes to zero as it approaches to the extremum. And extremal black hole, or BPS black hole that we are talking about, is at zero temperature. And then the entropy of the black hole at this extrema is supposed to count the number of ground state of such black hole. Okay. Now, when P and Q are large, the classical description should be good. So one would expect that the number of black hole state given by the quarter of the area of the horizon. But I said that that the area of the horizon is given by the BPS mass square. So this should be 1/4 of pi times m BPS square evaluated at attractor value. Okay. And such asymptotic formula has been studied and found to have an excellent agreement. By what I mean is that this is of course computed in the gravity approximation. But since this comes from a configuration of deep brain, so you can count number of state using the method of gauge theory on D-brain. And so when P and Q are large, asymptotically, one finds agreement of this formula. And so this was regarded as, of course, one of the most important success of string theory, because it shows that the string theory correctly reproduced this expectation from about what quantum gravity should behave. But one may ask, what happens when P and Q are not asymptotically large, when we are interested in finite charge correction? So when P and Q are not infinite, not asymptotically large, then one should start worrying about the quantum gravity effect. Namely, the effect due to string loop corrections. When P and Q are finite, the entropy receives string loop corrections. And so one would like to estimate that. We have part of low energy effective theory terms, including string loop correction norm, from the computation of topological string. And it turned out that those are the ones that are relevant for string loop correction to the entropy. And it basically follows from the argument that Ashok Sen made yesterday, so I don't have to rederive it. This formula that I'm going to write down was originally derived by Cardozo, DeWitt, and Mohaupt, and Strominger and Buff and I modified it a little bit to make it more suitable for the purpose that I'm going to describe later. But Sen's argument yesterday gave this derivation much more straightforward. So what he showed was that, first of all, that among terms in the low energy effective theory action, the only ones that are relevant are the ones that involves the field whose expectation value are fixed at the horizon. So that automatically shows that the term involving a hypermultiplet field should not enter into the entropy computation, because the black hole attractor mechanism does not fix the value of hypermultiplet field. It only fixes the vector multiplet field. So by that fact, we see that the only terms that are relevant for the computation of entropy are the ones that involve the vector multiplet fields. And moreover, he showed that the Bekenstein entropy formula is given by sort of Legendre transform of the low energy effective theory action. And in fact, that is a form, that is a structure that we observed earlier by looking at the formula that Cardozo, DeWitt, and Mohaupt derived. So let me just write down the expression that one obtained in that way. So what you do is the following. So you start with the sum of topological string amplitude and its complex conjugation to all order in genus expansion. So this is going to be a function of vector multiplet moduli of the Carabial. And so this is the definition of F. And I'm going to write the Carabial moduli X to be in this way. First of all, I anticipate. So let me, for simplicity, choose the gauge so that this C is equal to 1. Let me first anticipate that the real part of X is magnetic charge P. So I already wrote this X to be equal to P times I phi. And phi is the imaginary part of X that is to be determined later. And the entropy formula we found following the work of Cardozo, DeWitt, and Mohaupt is the following, that the entropy of the black hole of charge P and Q, including all string loop correction, is given by this F, which is now a function of P and phi, because X is given by a function of P and phi. plus qi phi I summed over I from 0 to h to 1, where this q, so on the left-hand side, it's a function of p and q. Right-hand side is a function of p, q, and phi. And in fact, phi is to be determined by some nonlinear relation given by this equation. And this is actually the, you can easily check by yourself that if you restrict it, you restrict yourself to g equal to 0, then this reproduces two things, the classical attractor equation and classical entropy formula. It's easy to see that this reproduces the classical attractor equation, because when g equal to 0, f is just a real part of f. Curly F is a real part of F naught. And then if you compute this, it actually is equal to this formula. So for G equal to 0, that equation reduced to this equation. Okay? And so, in fact, therefore, this is a natural generalization of this classical attract equation to higher genus. But if you look at this equation, so the thing we noticed that is that if you look at this equation, this takes a form of Legendre transform from entropy to this function f and vice versa. Okay? So we are looking at this formula, and we thought that, well, if the effective action computation give rise to Legendre transform, then the true quantum mechanical formula should include should involve Laplace transform. Well, without good reason. And the thing is that there is an intrinsic ambiguity in computing 1 over Q, 1 over charge correction using semi-classical reasoning. And so this is one way to derive it. So the way that this was derived by Cardoso, DeWitt, and Mohaupt was that they look at the low energy effective theory action, including quantum loop correction, and apply the Ward's formula that Ashok Sen used in his last lecture, and then arrived at the formula that is equivalent to this formula. But that is the derivation is sort of mixture of loop corrected, string loop corrected formula, because it includes low energy effective theory term generated by string loop correction, but with a semi-classical argument of Ward. And in principle, there can be some corrections to this formula proportional to 1 over charge. So we thought that the correct interpretation of this formula should be that the number of states of black hole is given by, not by a Laplace. So naively, if this entropy is equal to log of number of states, then this would be the Legendre transform. But we thought that correct formula should include, involve the Laplace transform like that. And of course, this formula would reduce to this formula in the limit when charge is large, and the you can evaluate this Laplace transform by steepest descent method, because Legendre transform may be regarded as approximation to Laplace transform in the limit when you can apply the steepest descent evaluation. But basically, we obtained this, we made this conjecture as an extrapolation from this formula that was derived from this combination hybrid of low energy effective theory computation and semi-classical formula of Ward. So this needs to be tested, because this is a conjecture. And remarkably, this has passed several rather non-trivial tests. And so there have been several work by Buffer and myself with Aganaji, Saurina, and Buffer. And there are some interesting computations by Sen and Daboka, Denef, and Moore. I think Ashok will describe some of this computation this afternoon. So they consider the case when type 2 string has heterotic string dual. And in that case, sometimes this charged black hole get mapped to elementary string state. And then you can count the number of states. And then you can try to compare the state counting of heterotic string, fundamental string, which you can use to compute this omega. Compare that in the original type 2 language, the computation of this topological string amplitude. Sometimes the comparison is difficult because it turns out that in several cases, when you start with heterotic string and map it to type 2 string, then the configuration is such that effective topological string coupling is large. So we made this, when we wrote this, made this conjecture, we stated explicitly that we meant this equation to be true to all order in string perturbation theory, but there can be important non-perturbative effect. And in fact, I guess if we have time, I would like to mention that. And so this is meant to be true only to all order in string perturbation theory. So if effective topological string coupling is large, then it is difficult to check this formula. But in the case when the effective topological string coupling is small, then this has been checked in all cases that I know of. So in the remaining 15 minutes or so, let me describe one of the case that we have studied. So this involves the following particular Carabial space. So far, I have been mostly using the language of type 2b because it is easier. It involves only classical geometry at the tree level. But this example is based on type 2a. But it is easy to go from type 2b to type 2a. You just replace scalar moduli by complex moduli. So in this case, I choose Carabial to be the total space of the following vector bundle. Sigma G is a Riemann surface. This is not to be mistaken with a world sheet, but this is a part of the target space, Carabial. So we start with some genus G Riemann surface for fixed G, and consider a sum of line bundle L minus M and L of 2G minus 2 plus M. And this minus M and these are the degree of this line bundle, basically the curvature of this line bundle. And we have chosen this in such a way that the total space becomes rich, flat, and scalar. So Riemann surface is complex one-dimensional. Line bundle is complex one-dimensional. So the total space is complex three-dimensional. And the reason that we chose this example is that the topological string amplitude is computed to all order in G by mathematician Brian in Vancouver and Panda, Harry Panda in Princeton. On the other hand, we can also compute omega PQ for some D brain. So here we are considering type 2A, so we should be considering even brains. So we consider D4 brain wrapping part of this Carabial, the total space of this line bundle over here. Okay? So we would like to discuss entropy of this space. Now, before we go on, I'd like to make one comment. This is a non-compact Carabial, as you see, because line bundle is just a vector space, so it goes towards infinity. So we are considering non-compact Carabial. So you may say that, well, this does not, it does not make sense to consider gravity in four dimensions, because if you compactify 10-dimensional theory on non-compact 6-dimensional space, then the Newton constant in four dimensions is zero. And that is true. In fact, you can see that the four-dimensional Planck scale square is equal to volume of Carabiao times 10-dimensional Planck scale to the square, not square, to the, sorry, to the eighth. I guess the dimension is six, yeah. And the reason is that if you start with Einstein action in 10 dimension, if you naively dimensional reduce it to four dimension, you get the volume of Carabiao times R times square root of G of four dimensional Einstein action. So you get the volume of Carabiao multiplied to the inverse of the Newton constant square. And so if the volume of the Carabiao goes to infinity, then the effective four-dimensional Planck mass goes to infinity if you fix the 10-dimensional Planck mass. But the way we look at, we think of this is actually that we just regard this as a local model of compact Carabiao. You can consider many compact, actually many continuous family of compact Carabiao space for which some neighborhood of this Carabiao look like this geometry. Okay? And so you can start thinking about this compact Carabiao and wrap D4 brain on this part of this compact Carabiao and then take the limit where this portion becomes large or rather focus on this infinitesimal neighborhood. And for some computation, this limit of the compact Carabiao computation makes sense. And this is exactly the kind of situation where the limit makes sense, because what happens is that as you blow up this local model to be infinity, then the volume of Carabiao goes to infinity, but the BPS mass of the black hole also goes to infinity, because this cycle itself is non-compact. So what happens is the ratio of black hole mass and four-dimensional Planck scale square goes to finite as you take the large volume limit. And this is a three-level entropy of the black hole. This is the 4D entropy. So you can think of this as a non-compact limit of well-defined compact computation. And so that is what we should be thinking when we compare the topological string amplitude and the number of BPS state. Okay, and so I don't have time to tell you in 5 minutes how you go about counting the number of state using gauge theory on D-brain. But what happens is this, that So basically, you consider a supersymmetric gauge theory on this four cycle. And in order to count the number of ground state, you'll be doing topologically twisted gauge theory computation and basically compute some kind of index for the gauge theory. And but then when you do this computation, you notice that there is an action of U1 rotation on the fiber, because we are considering line bundle, so line bundle has symmetry under U1 rotation of the fiber. So when we compute the index, we can try to count the state that is invariant under rotation of the fiber. You can think of this as some kind of computing equivariant cohomology. And so that computation basically reduced to the computation on the base of this line bundle, because it is only on the base that is, it is only zero section of the line bundle that is invariant under this U1 rotation. So basically, what happens is that this four-dimensional gauge theory computation for this topologically twisted model reduced to two-dimensional gauge theory computation on the base, and basically two-dimensional Yang-Mills theory computation. So this is a familiar subject that had been studied very much in early 90s by starting from Taylor and Gross and many other people, Greg Moore Mike Douglas and those people. And so this is a very well-studied subject. So for example, many computations can be mapped to free fermion computation. So for example, in the case of G equal 1, basically this partial function on D4 brain is given by trace of Q to the minus MH e to the I theta P, where Q is equal to e to the minus topological string coupling, and H is a non-relativistic Hamiltonian for free fermion on a circle, where Pi is a discrete momentum of the free fermion. And N is a number of D4 brain. So we have a free fermion on the circle. And basically, the partial function of N free fermion compute for you the generating function of the number of state for D4 brain. And therefore, it should be related to the topological string partial function. And it is indeed true. So we have N free fermion. So when you compute the partial function, you can do the following. Well, first of all, what is the ground state of the fermion? Well, you have non-relativistic fermion. And so you have two Fermi surface for 1 plus 1 dimension. You can fill fermion from the ground state, lowest momentum, to the highest possible momentum by filling it one by one. So this is the lowest energy state. And then when you take trace, basically you count excitation from this ground state. So just like Nati Zeiberg was discussing yesterday, you start collecting these excitations. But we are interested in when we are to compare this computation with topological string computation, we would be interested in perturbative expansion, which corresponds to 1 over n expansion in that case. And when n is large, basically, you can disregard coupling between the two Fermi surfaces, and you can sum over state from this excitation of this Fermi surface and this Fermi surface separately. So to the leading order in 1 over n, basically, the small excitation near here is given by relativistic fermion. And then there are 1 over n correction to this computation, which if you compute it, exactly reproduce this topological string amplitude. And the reason that you get absolute value square is basically the reflection of the fact that you have two Fermi surfaces, and the two Fermi surfaces are decoupled to all order in 1 over n expansion. So this confirms this conjecture in this particular case. Now, the conjecture, as I said, is supposed to be true to all order in 1 over n expansion. But then you can ask, well, what is what happens if you try to understand the non-perturbative effect? In this example, then, you have to start worrying about the entanglement of the two Fermi surfaces. And that gives rise to some interesting non-perturbative effect. But if you want to know about it, you have to come to the strings conference in Toronto next week. So that's the end of my talk. Question? Well, thank you.